Well, being spring and everything, this happens to me every spring. Usually I go for a drive in the springtime, and maybe this has happened to you. Every spring or kind of transition season, I have this joyride moment where I just go for a drive. I just go for a drive. And maybe you've had this time where you're driving, your arms out the window, you're sort of delighting in what God is doing. Maybe you're going somewhere, maybe you're not. And you look in the rearview mirror and you see the sight that you never want to see. The flashing lights, right? Do you know what I'm talking about? That moment, it's one of the most gut-wrenching experiences. And it happens to me usually around Thanksgiving and sometimes in the spring. I don't know what it is about those, right? It's usually on Route 100, too. Driving back from Thanksgiving dinner, driving around because it's warm outside and it's springtime, just kind of having and you know having fun, all right? Everybody's full of food. I don't see the speed limit not long ago. Fly through the speed limit sign and go through one of these towns. And there's the dreaded flashing lights in the rearview mirror. My first thought is usually, yeah, go get that jerk up there. He passed me a little while back, and I don't know what he's doing, but he's driving pretty carelessly. Go get. And then Megan will say, I think that's for you, babe. Pull over. And the guy comes up, looks me in the eye, usually very, very polite, right? Do you realize what speed you were going? Nope, I have no idea what speed I was going. And, you know, I've stopped you because you're speeding. You're doing something dangerous and you don't even realize it. Flashing lights, right? Gut-wrenching moment. Maybe you've had that happen. It's very humbling because, you know, the flashing lights happen and they shine the spotlight on you. Bottom line, what that means is, in our culture, someone in authority is saying to you, stop what you're doing right now, because you might be in danger, and you need to listen. That's what that means. That's what that means. And I want to suggest to you, why we're looking at this passage, is that the ministry of Jesus very often is like that. It resembles that many times. You know, we entered into the season of Lent. And Lent, it's when we consider, historically, the church has paused and considered the life of Jesus, particularly the timeline of Jesus towards his crucifixion. And we prepare, you know, for Easter. But there are moments in the Bible where Jesus shows tremendous emotion. And he says things that you should stop and listen to. Certainly, some of them is when he gets angry at death. Certainly, some of them is when he rises again from the dead. And this morning, we have a pretty obscure one, but there's some show of emotion, there's some flashing lights. Can I point you to Jesus? It's in Mark 8. We'll start at verse 11. Let's read together. This is God's word. It says this, the Pharisees came and began to argue with Jesus, seeking from him a sign from heaven to test him. Here it is. And he sighed deeply in his spirit and said, why does this generation seek a sign? Truly, I say to you, no sign will be given to this generation. And he left them, got into the boat again, and went to the other side. Now they had forgotten to bring bread, and they had only one loaf with them in the boat. And he cautioned them, saying, watch out, and beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the leaven of Herod. And they began discussing one another the fact that they had no bread. And Jesus, aware of this, said to them, why are you discussing the fact that you have no bread? Do you not yet perceive or understand? Are your hearts hardened? Having eyes, do you not see? And having ears, do you not hear? And do you not remember? When I broke the 5 loaves for the 5,000, how many baskets full of broken pieces did you take up? They said to him, 12. And the 7 for the 4,000, how many baskets full of broken pieces did you take up then? And they said to him, 7. And he said to them, do you not yet understand? This is a little bit more of an obscure passage in the ministry of Jesus. We looked at it in our campus ministry a few weeks ago, and it's basically broken down into two interactions. There's a conversation that Jesus has with the Pharisees, and then there's a conversation that Jesus has with the disciples. But the reason why it commands our attention, the reason why it's a standout passage in the ministry of Jesus, is that Jesus shows raw, deep, rich emotion. Did you see it? Verse 12. What does he do? It says he sighed deeply in his spirit. Mark talks about that often. It means Jesus is angry. It would be as if he let out a kind of inside, ugh. I don't know how you translate that. That's probably why they didn't. But that's what it is. That's what verse 12 is. It's a moment of flashing lights. Do you see it? It's someone in authority saying, be careful. I need you to listen to what I'm saying. And then again, in verse 15, he says it really explicitly. If it wasn't clear enough to the Pharisees, later on in interaction number 2, he says, watch out for the leaven of the Pharisees. So very clearly, this is a moment in the scriptures that you're not meant to fly by. This is a moment that we're inclined to fly by, but if you read the text, you shouldn't. So let's mind the riches instead. First thing you'll see on your outlines is this. This passage displays the hidden sin of the Pharisees. The hidden sin of the Pharisees. Do you see it? It's in verse 11. Let's look at it. Start from the top. The Pharisees came, and they began to argue with him, seeking from him a sign from heaven to test him. And he sighed deeply in his spirit and said, why does this generation seek a sign? Truly I say to you, no sign will be given to this generation. And he left them. Why is that significant? Well, because Pharisees are intelligent. They are conservative, Bible-believing people. And those people have a rather awkward conversation with Jesus. Did you see it? They come to Jesus, and it says they're seeking a sign from heaven, and which in and of itself is not an evil thing. They're seeking a sign from heaven. The key moment here is where it says that they're to test him. The sign isn't the evil part. It's the testing part that's the evil part. So it says they're seeking a sign from heaven. Jesus, in response, says, no sign, sorry, and he leaves. And on the surface, you can think, Jesus is just a sassy one, isn't he? Right? That's what's happening. He just says no. And you can think that, but he explains what's happening in verse 15. He says this, look at it. Watch out, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees. Realize that there are not many places in the Bible where Jesus says to watch out for something. It's significant. It's a jump off the page moment. It's a big flashing light thing. For instance, Jesus never ever says, hey, guys, watch out for adultery. Never does it. I can't think of anywhere in the Bible where Jesus says, everybody, crowds, listen, disciples, just watch out for murder, okay? It's bad. Watch out for it. He never does that. Here's why. Because if you commit murder, usually you know you're committing murder. See? Why does Jesus never have to say, watch out for adultery? Well, because when you're committing adultery, usually, you know you're committing adultery, see? So it's not that this is a worse sin. Jesus is saying here, watch out, Pharisees, not because of what's going on in their life is, so to speak, worse, but because it is more hidden. Jesus is saying there is a hidden thing going on in the lives of the Pharisees that can destroy your soul. Really? Yeah, have you ever seen somebody who has a really serious, perhaps chronic disease, stage whatever lung cancer, and they're coughing and they're hacking out a lung, and you're like, and you're going, you know, you might want to get that checked out. And they go, I'm fine. That's what's happening here. There is a condition in the world that is at work that can take you out. And no amount of Easter or Christmas can rescue you from it. No amount of churchification will actually save you. And here's why. The poison in it is that you almost never think you have it. It's like the flashing lights to pull you over. They're always for somebody else. It's just always for somebody else. So Jesus tells us very explicitly what that condition is. It's on your sheet. It's the leaven of the Pharisees is an illustration used to describe something called having a hard heart. That's the condition. That's what it is. And it's this thing, spiritually, that you can have. It's something that can, where you can go, and you can always talk yourself out of thinking that you have it. That's how it works. Hard heart? Nope. Don't have that. I have everything else. I'm lustful, but I don't have a hard heart. I might even murder some. I don't have a hard heart. I'm angry, but I don't have a hard heart. You can always talk yourself out of thinking you have it. And the Bible, it's almost like it doesn't land. You can go through the season of Lent. You can have Easter Sunday and Good Friday, and you're like, this is cute. Because of this condition. So, can I show you some symptoms? Write it in if you like. It'll show up on the screen. How do you know if you have a hard heart? Well, let's look at the Pharisees. It seems from their life, they have an attitude of accusation. That's symptom number one. They have an attitude of accusation. Notice the Pharisees are the ones who come to Jesus. You could almost think this is a happy passage because they're coming to Christ. Isn't that the goal? But it says they're coming to Christ to argue. They're coming to Jesus to test him. And that's what Jesus growls about. That's what Jesus is, you know, upset about. He's not saying you guys are of inferior intellectual capacity. No. He never calls them stupid, but well, here's the problem. He's saying the attitude of your life is more about making accusations than hearing what is true. And that is a symptom of hard-heartedness. Can we all just admit we've been there? I remember growing up, teenager, in my parents' house. Teenagers, you ever do this? Do I really have to be home by 11? Well, let's think about that for a moment. Am I looking for information? Not usually. I'm asking a question to test authority. That's what that is. Right? Parents, if a guy comes over to your house and takes your daughter out on a date and goes, do I really have to drop her home by midnight? If you're smart, you will throw him out of your house. Because that guy is not looking for the rules. He's not looking for the law. He's looking for a loophole. Get rid of him, right? How about give me one good reason to go to church today? I mean, seriously? That's a question. But see, at the heart of it, it's not really a question. It's a statement. It's saying, I don't really want to go to church. My mouth is asking a question, but my heart is making an accusation. I'll give you another example. Husbands, ever do this one with your wives? You know there's a big difference between coming home and saying, hey, you know, unmet expectation. And you say to your spouse, hey, honey, what were you thinking? Or, hey, honey, hey, what were you thinking when you did that? Is there a difference? There's a huge difference. And the difference is it's not the words that are mouthed. It's the attitude behind them. One of them is an accusation of a hard heart, and the other is a soft heart looking to learn. One has humility and one does not. And Jesus is saying, doing that with God can wreck you. Doing that with God saddens Jesus. The Pharisees are saying, Jesus, why don't you give me a sign? And irony about this is in the same chapter, you know what Jesus had just done? He had fed 4,000, so he had just given them a sign. So what you're supposed to see is it all depends on the attitude of your heart. The way you go in can make or break you. And as a matter of fact, if you have a hard heart, Jesus, why don't you show up? Jesus, do you really have to say that sex is really within marriage? I mean, come on. God, how can all this nonsense have the Bible? Do you really base your life on an ancient book? You've heard that. I want to tell you that with an attitude of accusation, there is no sign that will satisfy you. Remember another place Jesus says, they won't even believe if someone rises from the dead. It's true. It's because of having a hard heart. Jesus has just done a sign right before this. So that's symptom number one, an attitude of accusation. Here's symptom number two. Hang tight, ready? The leaven of the Pharisees is an attitude of accusation, but the leaven of the Pharisees is also an attitude that spreads. Why do I say that? I say that because of the metaphor Jesus uses to describe the Pharisees. He doesn't say beware of the sin of the Pharisees. He doesn't say beware of the attitude of the Pharisees. He says beware of the leaven of the Pharisees. Leaven, same thing as yeast. Some of you are very culinary inclined. If you're not, I'll tell you what that is. Yeast is something that we use as a leavener or as a rising agent. We use it to make bread, bottom line, okay? But here's how yeast works. You throw in a little bit of it, and that little bit of it works its way into the whole batch. That's yeast. That's what you need to know about yeast. It spreads. Yeast gets everywhere. Even though it's small, it multiplies, it eats things, it's alive, and it takes over. And Jesus says that's what's happening in the lives of people right now. In interaction number one, that's how we're meant to interpret the people, these people who met Jesus face to face and completely missed Jesus in their hearts. So first it starts with a grumble. First it might start with being worrisome. And then maybe it escalates to being accusing. God, if you're so good, how dare you let me go through this struggle? I'm so upset at God. Grumble, accuse God. Grumble, accuse God. And if you do that, here's what happens in your heart of hardness. It grows. Soon you're not grumbling. Soon you are a grumble. Soon you're not complaining. You're just a complaining person. Soon you're not practicing anger. Anger's practicing you. And that's a disturbing image that's meant to say, wow, stop and take note. You can have just a bad attitude and you'll become a bitter person. I hope you see significant authority and flashing lights saying, stop, take note, and listen. Like, don't think that this is not for you. There's a reason I preach this sermon more than once. It's because I need to hear it more than probably most of you. Don't think, I wish my friend were here this morning. But stop and say, God, would you rescue me and preserve me from a hard heart? It's appropriate. It's the main thing that Jesus gets angry about. And I would say it's the main thing that can threaten your soul today. The hidden sin of the Pharisees. Now, most of you might be thinking, I'm not there. Like, I'm not quite at the bitterness stage yet. But before you say, let's close in prayer, there's a second interaction. Story goes on, right? Did you see the transition? Here's paragraph number 2, talks about the exposed sin of the disciples. Look at verse 14. So let's transition. Here's the second thing happening. So after that, they get into the boat. Verse 14, now they had forgotten to bring bread, and they had only one loaf with them in the boat. And he cautioned them, saying, watch out. Beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the leaven of Herod. Okay, and here's what happens. And the disciples began discussing one another the fact that they had no bread. Verse 17, and Jesus, aware of this, said to them, why are you discussing the fact that you have no bread? Do you not yet perceive or understand? Are your hearts hardened? What just happened? Okay, scene number 2. Leave Pharisees, get in the boat. And while Pharisees have explicit hard-heartedness going on, it's in mature, developed form. Jesus also says the disciples, the 12 who are following him, might also be suffering from hard-heartedness in its seed form. See? So it looks big and bad with the Pharisees, but it looks really covert and simple with the disciples. Awkward conversation number 2. It's a little funny. I mean, if they ever wanted to make like a, in one of the top 10 most comical moments with Jesus and disciples, this would be it, right? Because the disciples have one loaf of bread, they're in the boat, Jesus mentions yeast. We use yeast to make bread. Could Jesus be upset about bread? Why do we only have one loaf of bread anyway? And they all start getting bent out of shape because they're on a long journey, they don't have anything to eat. See what's happening? A little comical. So if this were a TV show, Jesus, it's this another palm in face moment where Jesus goes, oh dear, help me, right? These are the people I've come to die for. If you want to write it in, though, I don't think it's that funny. Here's what's happening. It's on your sheet. What are the disciples doing? Here's what I'd suggest to you. They are worried about the very thing they have seen God provide. That's what they're doing. They're worried. You could even say they're arguing. They're bent out of shape. And they pick the thing that they have most recently and abundantly and notably seen God do and provide. And I look at that and I go, I don't think I'm that different. And I don't think many of you here are either. When I graduated from college, I remember I wanted to go into ministry. And there are a lot of things that describe me when I was out of college, like awkward and single and all this, right? Okay. But the best word that described me was broke. And, I mean, I've already told you my drive-through habits and stuff, right? But I had many close calls financially. I didn't know, I had to raise support for my ministry. Really, it was one of the moments in life where I really felt like I had absolutely nothing. At one point, I'm driving back from doing a retreat with some students. I'm driving, it's the dead of winter, and my car basically explodes, right? And it breaks. I don't even know what happens because the car engine is like the human brain to me. So I take it to a mechanic, and they basically look at me and say, Dave, it's $275 to fix it, which doesn't sound like a lot, you know, perhaps now. Then it was like a death sentence. Like, I can't even put gas in the car. What am I going to do? And I'm not even kidding. I went to church the next morning, and a guy comes up to me and says, hey, my wife and I were just praying for you last night, and we heard you're going into ministry, and we're just so thankful that you'd like to serve the Lord that way. And I don't know, we just wrote a check out this morning for $275. Use that for whatever needs you have, okay? Thank you. So I went home, and I was floored, completely floored. Amazing. It's like a naked miracle. It's a sign. And beyond that, I mean, you think that's... I have done fundraising for a ministry over the course of 10 years. And over 10 years, I have seen God provide abundantly such that I don't really lack anything. I'm not throwing money away or anything, but I don't really lack anything. And I've seen that such that there are people and there are churches and there are that want to give generously to support the ministry that God's called us to. But you know what I worry about all the time? You guessed it. Money. I mean, every single time I look at a spreadsheet of the past year and our finances, it's like it just starts to, it rises, it bubbles up in me, and I go, God, this is never going to happen. And I actually start to go down a road that is very unhealthy for my soul, even though a day ago, a month ago, a year ago, I saw the naked miracle of provision. Are you that different? Maybe you're similar. That's what's happening here. That's what's happening in this passage. Jesus fed, that's why he talks about this with them. He fed 5,000 people. We all know that story. We've all read that passage. And then in Mark chapter 8, Jesus fed 4,000 people. So if the 5,000 wasn't enough, there's another miracle. It was a real miracle. And it happens in this passage. And both times, the Bible says there are baskets full of leftovers. You went to Sunday school and studied that. And they end up with more afterwards than they had before. And very likely, the funny part of this story is the loaf that the disciples have in the boat with them is probably one of the leftovers from one of the miracles. So they're holding a miracle in their hand. And they're thinking, oh man, bread. Where are we going to get bread? Seriously. Do you know that the feeding of the 5,000 is the only miracle that is in all four gospel accounts? All four gospel writers decided, we got to put this one in. So, I mean, just on a logical level here, just a minute, if it's one thing you get from reading the Bible, you don't even have to read all four gospels, you just read one of them, Jesus can make bread, okay? Maybe you don't believe in Jesus, maybe you believe in Jesus, but read the Bible, can we just give it to Jesus? He can make bread. Whether he can rise from the dead, we don't know yet. The man can produce loaves. And that is what the disciples choose to worry about. It's really insightful, friends, which is to say the things that you're inclined to obsess over, you'd think it's the things that you've seen no provision in. The Bible seems to say it's the things that you have seen provision in, which is why Deuteronomy 6 says, when you enter into prosperity, do not forget the Lord. That's why. So I would venture a guess that some of you, at one point, never thought that you would be where you are today. Maybe you grew up not having much. Maybe you grew up wondering, wow, am I going to go to college or make it through college? And you could not fathom, if you look at your life today, that you would be where you are today 5 years ago. And you have seen God provide for you financially. Maybe you've seen it. And you could, if we wanted, you could stand up here and give a testimony. I remember a time when, and God came through. But in spite of that, you constantly worry about provision, about your finances, and struggling and working and getting the job done is like an idol that you bow down to, which is why you're never involved in the church's life. Which is why you might think, yeah, I'd love to become a member here, but honestly, I really have bills to pay. Others of you, maybe, you can remember a time when you went through real, acute suffering. It was a time where you couldn't see the light at the end of the tunnel, and the world felt very, very dark. You actually thought, there is no way I can make it through this trial. You've seen pain, you've seen heartbreak, and whatever it is, but you could stand up here and give a testimony of how God has provided for you emotionally. And God has upheld you. And for some reason, you're here, and looking back, the only thing you can say is, God is good. And in spite of that, you still persistently, and regularly, and intensely, you worry about whether you'll make it. Is God going to bring something that's going to just wipe me out? It's going to be the end of it. And you are bowing down to the idol of trying to control your life and to avoid suffering. Okay, whatever it is. Some of you never thought you'd get married one day. And you're like, I could tell you a story about how awkward I was in middle school. It's amazing that I actually have a family. Me, I'm speaking me. Yet you constantly worry whether God is going to take away the gifts that he's given you. And friends, I don't know. I don't know what the Lord is going to do in your life. And I'm not advocating a naivety or a passivity. But I do want you to see the warning lights in here, which is to say that be careful that those worries, that those obsessions, that those things don't lead you on the path of accusing Jesus. Because that can be hard-heartedness in its seed form. When those seeds are planted in your life and you water them, you know how you water them? Like you have a hard month financially and you go, I see God, I knew it, you weren't going to do it. And mentally, you water those seeds. Those grow into the bitterness and hard-heartedness of the Pharisees until one day you're saying, God, give me a sign. I'm not even going to believe in you anymore. The hidden sin of the Pharisees, the exposed sin of the disciples. So what do we do about it, right? Last thing, real quick. Let's close with this. Last thing we see, it's in this passage, is the powerful solution to both. Really. Yeah, verse 18. Look at what Jesus says to these guys who are struggling and arguing and trying to figure out what they're going to eat for dinner. Here's what he says. Having eyes, do you not see? And having ears, do you not hear? And don't you remember when I broke the 5 loaves for the 5,000? How many baskets full of broken pieces did you take up? They said 12. And for the 7, for the 4,000, how many? And they said 7. And he said to them, do you not yet understand? See what Jesus does? This is amazing. He says, use your senses. He says, open your eyes and open your ears. Or write this on your sheet if you like. Think of it this way. Jesus says, there is overwhelming evidence that Jesus is faithful. That's what he says. He says, there is overwhelming evidence. There is abundant things that your senses can touch that says God is faithfully, abundantly, with you and providing for his children. He takes them on this miniature journey through the past. Do you see? That's what he does. He says, let's go down memory lane just for a moment, disciples. And let's think about things for a second. Do you remember when this happened? Okay, yeah. How'd that work out for you? Do you remember when this happened? Okay. Faith in God is entirely rational. Faith in God makes total sense. And I've talked to students sometimes, and students have often looked at me and said, Dave, you know what I need to do? And their testimony says something like this. If one day I just took a leap of faith and I put my trust in Jesus. And I appreciate that, and I get what that is. And I know that God works, has often worked in the lives of people that way who need to take a leap of faith. But honestly, I want to suggest to you this morning, brothers and sisters, I don't think following Jesus is that much of a leap at all. It does require faith, but it's not a blind leap of faith, because there is clear evidence all around, open your eyes, that Jesus is the best gig in town by far. And if you're here today and you're wondering, man, what is my life going to look like? Where am I going to be in 10 years? Kids, am I going to get to go to college, right? Am I ever going to find somebody who's going to love me? Am I going to be alone all the time? I don't want to be the creepy cat lady when I grow up, right? No offense to cat lovers, I apologize. I want to let you know that Jesus is faithful. And it's rational. It is rational for you to look at your life and to say, you know what, I'm going to adopt an attitude. Instead of an attitude of accusation, I'm going to adopt an attitude of humility and reliance on him and his church. And that's where I'm going to invest myself. Maybe you're here and you have intellectual hang-ups about Christianity. Maybe you're wondering, how do you rationalize science with this? And really, like, I thought there's evidence for that. And how old is the earth anyway? Whatever your questions are, I want to let you know that there is fantastic evidence that Jesus is faithful. I want to let you know that there are wonderful, scholarly, godly answers to questions that you might have. Maybe your hang-up is like, I want to join the church. But you know what? There are all these theological awkwardnesses that I've never really worked through. Great. So in an attitude of humility and reliance on Jesus, because God is faithful, there is evidence that you can trust him and you can trust his people. Here's the question. Friends, do you remember? I keep literally, I've said this to some of you before, I keep things on my desk, in my office, as Ebenezers, as things that remind me, don't forget to remember. All of us here today, I am guessing, are prone to wonder. The question behind the question of worry is, God, do you really love me? Again, here it is. Same thing. Do you know there is overwhelming evidence in history? That's why we date time after Jesus, that says that God loves you. And he's not going to forsake you. It's the moment where Mark fast forwards, and this gospel ends, and Jesus is crucified. You know what happens. Jesus is spread out. Jesus is sacrificed. Jesus is nailed and pierced, and he dies. He breathes his last breath. So that if you're ever in a moment of wonder, man, is God going to be faithful? You can look back on the cross and say, he would rather let his son go through that than leave me to wonder if he loves me. And Jesus rises from the dead. It's what we anticipate as we look to Easter, or Good Friday, excuse me, and Easter, to say, I'm never going to question. There's overwhelming evidence that God is faithful. So let me close by asking again, do you think you have a good memory? Practice the powerful solution to both. Let's pray.